as you heard at the top of the show, he has been the topic of much discussion in the sport of thoroughbred racing over the past couple of days. And joining us now to help shine some light on what's happening with this situation is Matt Haggerty with the Daily Racing Form. He's been on top of it from the start. Matt, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, I said this at the top of the show. It's too bad that it was kind of a slow news week, huh?
Yeah, you did have the sales going on and a lot of discussion about the Jockey Club proposal on capping stallions. And then you did have this story breaking on the New York Times on Wednesday night. So, yeah, it's been a pretty busy week in Central Kentucky for sure.
I kind of laid out some of the details in the opening segment, and I referenced the fact that you have an article out there on Daily Racing Form right now referencing some comments from the chairman of the CHRB at the time. That was Chuck Winter. He's not in that position anymore, saying that the CHRB did indeed follow protocol on this basically to a T. So catch us up on everything now. Where does this situation stand?
Yeah, I think we're there's still a lot of questions out there as far as the authority that the CHRB had to act in this manner. You know, whether or not there were the proper rules in place in which you could consider mitigating circumstances in a case like this. I know Mick Ruiz was quoted in at least one article over the last couple of days saying that he was considering a lawsuit based on the Santa Anita Derby result, and I think that's going to make getting answers to those questions a little difficult because once that's in play, then the lawyers get involved at the commission level. They'll be very careful about what they say, and so I think right now you do have the CHRB saying that, yes, this was a case of environmental contamination. We did the proper investigation under our rules. We don't name a trainer unless we file a complaint. Since there wasn't a complaint filed in this case, then it was case closed, and we didn't, and we followed our protocols. Like I said, I think you know that there still needs to be a little digging on the timeline here, and what rule was exactly in place at the time that they considered the case. But then you also have some kind of weird circumstances in the racing industry over the past 10 years as they've tried to better deal with environmental contamination. That probably introduces some wrinkles into this as well.
And as you pointed out in the article, this Bob Baffert's horse, Justify, was not the only horse that tested positive for this particular substance in their system, and all of the cases were handled in the same fashion. Is that right?
Well, that's what the CHRB says.
Yep.
Now, with scopolamine and with a lot of prohibited substances, just to make sure that racing labs aren't filing test results with the commission on every single horse, you know, based on a 1 or 2 nanogram finding in a test result, say of cocaine, which is omnipresent in the environment, can be detected at very low levels. There's what's called a regulatory limit. Now, what we know is that there was a report issued on Justify because it was above the regulatory limit, and we don't know how many of those other horses tested above the regulatory limit as well. Now, there could be a case in which the CHRB, upon finding one or two over that same weekend, requested all the test results for all those horses and then found samples that had tested for scopolamine below the regulatory limit. I know this sounds really technical, but we don't really know the total disposition of those cases because we haven't gotten chapter and verse on what happened there. We do know that the CHRB is claiming that, yeah, we had a spate of scopolamines that weekend and that all of them were dismissed because we had traced them back to contaminated feed that had made its way to 4 barns there at Santa Anita.
Yeah, man, I'm still in the process of learning about this particular substance, scopolamine, to the point where at the top of the show, I went with a couple of different pronunciations to make sure I was getting it right. So scopolamine is the right pronunciation of it, but it doesn't sound, from everything I've been reading, it doesn't sound like this is something that trainers are going to give their horses to try to improve performance. It just doesn't seem like it works that way with this particular substance.
Yeah, with the exception of the one quote, which was somewhat puzzling in the initial article, I don't I haven't had a conversation with a chemist or a horseman yet who thinks that this substance, it's a naturally occurring substance in Jimson weed, the chemical name is hyoscine, that you would administer this to a horse for a performance-enhancing effect. One, you're going to get caught. It's routine on the drug assays that are done on the post-race tests. Two, it's toxic. Three, it doesn't have predictable effects on a horse. And so if you were to try to use this for some reason, you're going to get caught anyway. It's not something that you would get a predictable performance-enhancing effect on. Now, it is on the list of prohibited substances, but so are 500 other substances that are known to have a pharmacological effect on a horse, which is why it's prohibited. It would have a pharmacological effect. So, it's just hard to understand why a trainer prior to the Santa Anita Derby would administer deliberately a substance like this to a horse, when the easiest explanation and the explanation that we've seen over the past 25 years since scopolamine first cropped up in California was that the feed was contaminated, and their investigations, at least according to them, said that was their conclusion.
Yeah, you know, by the way, talking with Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, you know, Matt, Ray Pollock of the Pollock Report put out a couple of tweets after this article came out, and I want to read this because I thought it was spot on. He talked about scopolamine, the same prohibited substance found in 1995, and he said that could have been 1994. It was right in that time in the mid-90s. In horses trained in California by Ron McAnally, Willard Proctor, Mark Hennig, and Richard Mandela, the CHRB looked foolish prosecuting those cases even after it became clear the source was Jimson weed contamination. In fact, the CHRB could not rule out that the contaminations may have occurred in the CHRB-controlled test barn, so those trainers were exonerated after the case was heard by an administrative judge. But the disqualification of the horses who tested positive was not overturned. So this is something that the state of California has been dealing with since the mid-90s, and probably even further back than that.
Yeah, I included the information about the 1994 positive. The positives were 1994,
yep,
eventually adjudicated in 1995. In my articles, starting out the coverage because of its obvious relevance to this case.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you've had other scopolamines pop up. The last time that the CHRB actually adjudicated one, as in took it to a complaint, was 2007. It was a Jerry Hollendorf for horse. They eventually got around to issuing a fine in August of 2018. It took them 18 months to adjudicate the case. Since that time, there's been a lot of evolution in how racing commissions across the United States deal with possible environmental contaminants. Rules have been changed to kind of weaken the absolute insurer rule, to make sure that horsemen aren't getting unfairly penalized for something like this. And, you know, to be honest, racing commissions are a little, even a lot more gun-shy these days about adjudicating a case like this, knowing that they're going to end up in civil court and knowing that the most likely result after spending all that time and money fighting it is that a judge is going to throw it out.
Yep.
So you have all those factors going into this as they're considering this positive by, or this test result by Justify. And, you know, it's you can argue either way on what the CHRB will do, but there's precedent for this, and there's precedent, you know, across the United States on it.
Matt, does this bring to light maybe even a bigger issue in the sport? The fact that we do allow our regulators, people that are on these racing boards in all these different states, for example, to be in positions with major conflicts of interest, in many cases owning a horse or horses who are in the care of a trainer that they may have to eventually discipline. Is that a problem that needs to be addressed?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a problem that needs to be addressed. In this case, you had Chuck Winter, who actually owned a piece of a horse that that was trained by Baffert. Now, I know that Chuck has said that, well, it was a tiny piece of a horse that hadn't even started, something like that. But you do see this at racing commissions across the United States, and let's be fair. It is not just the racing industry in which people with financial interests in the industry that they're regulating sits on boards. You find, you know, lawyers are on the bar. You have doctors on medical boards, veterinarians on veterinary boards. There is a certain amount of expertise that you want on these boards so that you can craft the proper regulations. At the same time, there should be a recusal process in this. Now, as I understand it, Winter has said that he did seek guidance from their legal counsel on whether he should have recused himself. So, you know, perhaps he did have the green light based on that guidance. But here in Kentucky, I brought this up on a radio show a couple of days ago. We had the Graham Motion case here, which I'm sure you guys probably talked about, which was another case of environmental contamination. Yep. And when they eventually deliberated on the settlement in a closed-door session, you know, I asked for the vote count and got something like, oh, it was 8-0. Well, there's 15 people on the commission. 7 people had to recuse themselves from the decision because they had some sort of financial interest with Graham Motion. You know, you probably could find some people that aren't that deep into the industry that have, you know, a working knowledge of it to avoid these things. And I think if something is going to come out of this, and I know the columnist for the San Diego Union-Tribune did something on this the other day, it would be looking at this idea of conflict of interest and trying to clean those conflicts up.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch-22, isn't it, Matt? Because we talk about that a lot, that you want people that have some skin in the game, that have that passion and want the sport to go forward. You want people that are invested in the sport in some way. We see it all the time where industry organizations bring in people from, say, golf or tennis, and they know nothing about horse racing, and they put them in positions to make decisions, and it never, never works out. Just doesn't. So you want people to have skin in the game.
That's a good point, because the racing industry does not have a really good history of bringing in people from other disciplines and them being successful, you know, either over the short term or the long term. You know, there is a certain amount of expertise that you do want on these boards. And like you said, you want passion for the game. People that believe in the game and the business, but know how to recognize what is a violation or a conflict of interest. And so I think there's a fine line you walk there, and that's probably where a lot of the controversy is based here. And that this looks, you know, the appearance of the conflict of interest is a conflict of interest. That's just how ethics lawyers deal with these things. So, you know, at the very least, you would hope that people will be taking a better look at what the conflicts could be when they're making decisions and adjudications.
Well, Matt, I know this story is going to continue to evolve, and I know you'll be on top of it as you have been from the beginning. We'll encourage people to follow you on Twitter to get all of your Daily Racing Form stories. That's at DRF Haggerty, HEGARTY, at DRF Haggerty on Twitter, and that'll link you to all of the Daily Racing Form articles. And keep up to date on what's happening. There'll be more to come, I'm sure. And Matt, really appreciate the visit here this morning. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and people can wear what they love by going to embracetherace.com. Appreciate the visit, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.